Welcome to Happily Family. I'm Cecilia
I'm
Hilke,
Jason Hilke.
and we are delighted today to have Cheryl Ung with us. Cheryl is an educator, coach, homeschool mom of her three boys, and an advocate for child-centered learning. She understands the overwhelming challenges parents face in balancing life, educating their children, and fostering meaningful connections. With certifications in peaceful parenting, wonder-led education, mindfulness, women-centered coaching, and her own study of neuroscience and social emotional learning, Cheryl takes a multidisciplinary perspective to help mothers find aligned ways to create the greatest ease in their lives. Welcome, Cheryl. It's great to have
Good
you.
to have you here again, Cheryl.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I wanted to first ask you about when parents are overwhelmed, what do you think is the best area of their family to start making change and why?
Yeah, I think right now parents are constantly overwhelmed and stressed. And I think in part that has to do with a lot of isolation. In our modern day parenting, we don't have our village, right? In the past, maybe 100 years ago, even decades ago, we would have the community, we would have neighborhoods, we would have grandparents. But right now, a lot of times we are just parenting on our own. And so that expectation and that isolation that parents face is tremendous, and that leads to a lot of stress and overwhelm, like we talked about. If you were to leave your kids out on the streets to play, you would probably be called child protection on, right? And there's just so much expectations on parents to do this parenting gig alone, and I don't think that that's truly fair. That these societal norms have created this, thing for us to do, and it's really too much. And I would say that it will be best if we have parents, other parents, we have peers, we have coaches, we have experts, and we have all of these people to support us in this journey. So when parents come to me and they say that they are overwhelmed, I usually tell them this: connect with yourself, because it's so important for you to know what's important for yourself, right? It's not even about connecting with your children. It's you need to know what your values are, what your beliefs are. And when you're able to know what all of these are, everything will start to align, and then you will be able to support your family better. The other two ingredients that I often talk to parents about is play and reflection. To me, play, the resistance melts in the presence of play. When we are more playful, this resistance and these things start to melt away, and children tend to get more cooperative. And reflection really seals in this all the learning and all the growth. And together, I call this my CPR method, and I think that would be the best way for parents to start.
Okay, so CPR, walk me through it. What's the C stand for?
C for connection,
Connection.
P for play, and R for reflection.
Okay, so the connection, let's talk about connection first, because that's very, and the way you described it there got me really thinking. And you're talking about connection with yourself, right? That's the connection. Maybe is it beyond just connection with yourself when you say connection, or is that the primary?
Yeah, we start with connection with ourselves, because we need to know thyself first, right? We need to know ourselves enough to be able to say, this is what I want for myself, and this is what I want for my family, right? Richard Branson has this thing that he calls it the circles of impact. When you start with yourself, and then you ripple out the effect or the benefits that you do for other people. And it starts with yourself, then it starts with your family and your neighbors, and if you work with a company, then in your company, and then the country and the world. And that's how we create impact, and that's also how we create legacy.
So this, as I start to think about that, I get a little bit nervous about how I would actually get into connection with myself. Like to connect with myself and to figure out like what's important to me feels a little overwhelming. And I'm not really sure where I would start. I mean, I guess I would start to think about like the way I was raised, but then there's stuff I'd want to change about how I was raised, what's important to me now. So how do you guide parents, or how do you talk to parents about connecting with themselves and identifying what's important to them?
Yeah, it can be a very daunting process, because you're really trying to get to know yourself, and some parts of yourself you may not truly like, right? And so it can be really scary. But I think the number one thing is building that awareness. When you know that this is not working out for you, that you get the choice. You get the choice to choose to make a difference for yourself and your family. Usually we think for the people around us, as moms, as educators, we think for the people around us, right? We think about the children that we hold in dear. And when we think from that position, we think beyond ourselves, beyond what we are scared to do. And just as you say that, oh, this is really coming out of my comfort zone, when I see in view of all of these other people that I'm holding in space for, then there is greater opportunity for courage and bravery.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I already forgot. What's the P for?
So Beaver's play.
Play. Oh, yeah. How
Yes.
could I forget that
I
part?
wanted to talk about that
Yeah.
because I remember, especially when our kids were young, and there were some tough moments where I was feeling overwhelmed, feeling just frustrated with whatever they were doing.
That one time.
Just that one
It
time.
only happened once.
And
Or a million.
I had an awareness that even though it felt like extra effort to be playful with them in that moment, that that actually, in the end, was less effort because then it changed the whole dynamic of the family and everybody loosened up,
Including yourself.
including myself. I would oftentimes start making fun of myself. That was the easiest thing to do. And then it ended up being less effort in the long term. So is that part of what you
Absolutely.
do with play?
Absolutely. I'm a firm believer of playful parenting, and Dr. Lawrence Cohen actually talks a lot about this. And so playful parenting doesn't just go beyond what you do to your kids, right? It feels, especially when you're younger, it feels like you're doing something to your kids. But really, especially when they grow to tweens or even adolescents, right? We are really talking about having this playful energy with them, right? It really goes beyond just playing, and creating fun, silly jokes, but to move to more maybe humor, and to be more playful, lighthearted. I think lighthearted is the word I'm looking for, lighthearted energy when you're working with teens and things like that. But even for yourself, right? When I talk about connection with yourself, when you play, you're also playing with yourself. You have this lighthearted, playful curiousness about the things that are happening. Yes, like Jason said, it can be really scary to think about, oh, my childhood trauma and things like that. But when you bring on this playful curiousness of really, what is this? What is this happening to me? But not taking it very deeply and going down into the spiral, but really just having that playful energy to say, to explore, round it, and just be very gentle with it. And that's how you really start being connecting with yourself and to be playful with yourself.
So what I like about it is that I think maybe it's not true for all parents, but for me, I would take parenting very seriously. Like it's serious work, right? And so we're reading these books and we're doing this, all these studies and all this stuff, and it's serious. And that's what I like about playful parenting is it kind of like would help shift me out of that seriousness, which the kids obviously would pick up on. And so it helped shift me out as well as everyone else. I was actually looking at, we have playful parenting right here on our bookshelf. I was going to grab it and see, like, because I is like one of the things that's really helped me in shifting my my relationship with parenting, but also with our kids. And I think as our kids have gotten older, I've tried to master the dad jokes in a way that they still find funny, and it's their terrible jokes, but that, the dad jokes work really well for me to bring some lightness to them as they've gotten older. Okay, so tell us about the reflect
Oh,
part.
wait, I want to say something else about play. Because, again, for a parent that might be a little overwhelmed, I'm curious to hear if you have any tips for how parents can start to engage in play. And I want to ask this because I remember seeing this ad. It was in a magazine or something. Or no, it was on the front of a toy when our kids were young. And it showed the dad sitting behind the child on a couch, like reading a newspaper or something like that. And the kid was playing with the toy. And the message of this photograph that was on the box of the toy was, hey, this thing will entertain your kid so you can sit back and read the paper and sit on the couch. And I don't think that's the kind of play that we're necessarily talking about here, but that honestly was kind of sometimes my goal was, can I just keep my kids busy doing something while I can check out? So anyway, how do we use play in a different way? And how do we just begin if you might not be a person that's naturally very playful?
Oh, I definitely hear you on this because I started out like that too. My favorite example is that you can play even on your bed. So there are times I'm a very low energy person in general. And so there are times that I just don't want to get out of bed. I work even on my bed. So I'm so that sort of girl. But there are times that you can play even on your bed. You can do this monster type play. You can be as angry just with your facial expression, and just sitting on the couch, and you can give the, oh, I'm a monster coming for you, and you then your child will go into this little scared thing. So there are many ways that you can play without taking a lot of effort, and it's just really being creative about how you can play.
Yeah, I like that. Different voices, pretend, using things from the environment, like you talked about the bed or the couch pillows or whatever. I used to try to like do fake accents of different people. I would make everything into a song, even a bad song. Even when I was asking them to pick up their shoes, everything turned into a song.
Okay, so I didn't do that. I'm not like going to be making up songs. It's just not like that's, see, that's in a way, that's how we're different. Like my playfulness was different in that way. Like I'm not going to be doing like fake voices. I'm just, and honestly, I wasn't really very good at or enjoyed doing like dollhouse play. But what I learned from teaching in preschool was that I could find something that I would enjoy that they would also enjoy. And then the magic kind of happened. Like, so if I was able to find something playful or fun that I was enjoying while they were also enjoying it, like we could do it together, then that all of a sudden kept me engaged, kept me like clearly like noticing that I was being playful and they would also engage. So it was one of the things that we always said in the classroom is if you're not having fun, they're not having fun, most likely. Like that's, and so with playful parenting, I had to find something that was like, hey, this is fun for me, this is fun for you. And sometimes it was just literal games, you know, that we would have that we could play together, because I sometimes would lack in creativity. And so I would need the support of a game or of something to be able to do it with. Do you have any, does that, is that something that you or
Yeah,
parents that you work with have struggled?
that completely resonates with me. It's so important to play when you're interested. As an advocate for self-directed education, it's not just about yourself, right? Or your child, and just letting your child do be self-directed. You yourself have to be self-directed too. And if you can't find play elements within that, then that's not going to work. And that's not going to create that cooperation, that connection that you're looking for, right? So Identifying play teams are so important. If even within the dollhouse play team, dollhouse activity, you can create play teams that are maybe more suitable for you. Maybe the doll has to go out of the house and do some chores or things like that. That has got maybe she likes to do like Papa Mama kind of play, and you are just introducing a different type of play, or maybe like going out to work. And so it's just using the activity as a central holding piece, but creating different play themes around it that interests both of you.
Yeah,
Right.
that's good. I could talk about play for a while,
Yeah, me
but
too.
so we're at the
But
R
yes,
of
let's go to
reflect.
R.
Could you talk a little bit more about reflect?
Yeah. So reflection is so important. It is the thing that really fuels in the learning and growth. Sometimes we don't like we talk a lot about play as a way to enter the child, enter ourselves. But if we don't pull it out on a I would call it a metacognitive connection level, right? Then you are making things visible. Then sometimes they don't realize, especially for older kids, they don't realize that this is the impact that's creating for them. So sometimes it could be as simple as saying, I'm noticing that you are doing things this differently, doing things differently. Instead of getting frustrated as you used to, you chose a different way, and that different way resulted in a positive outcome. Did you realize that? And so being able to reflect in this way really helps them to see that, oh, actually, I have power within myself. I have power within myself to make that change. And that I can actually do this. So there can be a lot of power when we flesh such things out for them to reflect on.
Yeah, I love asking kids questions,
You like asking anyone
and
questions.
anyone questions. My children sometimes accuse me of interrogating them because I like to ask questions so much. But I appreciate what you're talking about, that it's a metacognitive approach that we're trying to help our kids think about their thinking and reflect on their experience.
And to own their growth, the
Yeah.
changes they're making.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So what are some of your favorite questions to ask kids, or what are your favorite ways to help kids reflect a little more deeply?
Yeah, great question. Like you said, sometimes kids do find that when we ask questions, they tend to be a little bit defensive, especially if they're kids who are not used to being asked this sort of questions. They would get very defensive, or they would, no, mom is trying to do something funny, right? And so we try not to get into this power struggle in that sense. So I would tend to leave it as a statement rather than as a question. So I would say, oh, I wonder what this would be like. And it is more like a rhetorical question if you think about it, and a statement would be like, I noticed that you're doing this. There's no judgment attached to it. It's a very objective statement of just stating what's happening right here, right now. And that could be a way that you could do that. Sometimes you would end off with a question like, what do you think? Or like maybe a what, how do you want to do things differently, for example. And that could be somewhere that you could, lead on later, but to begin with more of a statement or a rhetorical question would probably be a better start for people who are not used or kids who are not used to being asked these questions. My kids are more used to it because I've been asking them questions like that all the time. But I also tend to be a bit more sensitive because sometimes it does feel like a bit intrusive. And so I want to give them space to not feel pressured to have an answer to answer me all the time, right? Sometimes we just don't have answers to things in life, and we just need more time to ponder. And giving them opportunity to ponder by telling them, oh, I wonder that whether that this would be what we will be working on. And that could be a way for them to just, yeah, maybe I wonder, and just leave it as that. And then maybe at another opportunity to bring this up again and continue the conversation.
Yeah, I love that. I wonder.
There's two other things I liked about what you said was that by kind of calling out or recognizing the work that they're doing or the changes that they're making, that helps me as a parent start to view them as being capable and not. I think that this was a struggle that I went through a few times as a parent, was just seeing everything that was wrong and just seeing like all the problems and, all the struggle. And I really had to do some work to start to see like, oh, there's a lot that's going really well. And by voicing that, not only is it good for the kiddo, but it's also good for me to be seeing the positives of what they're changing. And, oh, there was one other thing I was going to say about that. Like, it helps me see their positive, them see the positive. Oh, I was going to say something else. I'll think about it. But anyhow, that's one of the things I really enjoyed about what you said there. I think, oh, I know what it was. And also because sometimes especially the kids that are struggling just with life, or, they're like, they don't fit into the box of what, many other kids do, that they are so afraid of being in trouble. They're so like, they hear so often from others, like the things they're not doing well. There's a lot of negative, a lot of knots, a lot of what they're not doing well. So giving them those acknowledgments and recognizing things they are doing well is a nice opportunity for them to see something that maybe they're not getting that message all that often from. Do you want to say anything else about that?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. A lot of times, especially neurodivergent kids, they hear a lot of negative words. I think there's some statistics that shows that they hear like a lot more negative words, 3 times, I believe, more negative words than other children. And we don't want our children to have such impact, negative impact on their self-esteem. And I wouldn't say that this is just only for neurodivergent kids. For anyone, to be honest, right? Even for an adult, if you have a boss who's constantly telling you of all the bad things that you do, you feel like quitting too, right? So it's not just about them, it's just being human. And I want to bring about this idea that when we hear these messages, the way that we interpret these messages is also very important, right? And sometimes, and I would say a lot of times, the way that we react to these messages, to these communication, is automatic. Neuroscience have shown that a very large percentage of our reactions are automatic. They are all very ingrained in our body systems, in our memory, even in our encoded in our DNA through epigenetics. So all of these things really affect a child. And when we say that, what does that reflect on us, right? That we ourselves have certain things that we need to work on, that we may be triggered by what the child is doing. But it's actually a reflection of what we went through, right? When a child is acting in a certain way, not is this child inheriting our cycles, our generational cycles, we are also passing them all of these triggers and things like that too. So until we are willing to look into ourselves to say that, hey, this could be a moment that I could be passing little traumas, to my kid. Do I really want to do that? And then really taking a step back to say, am I really being aligned to my true values? Is that the legacy that I want to bring forward to my kids and to the generations to come? Which is why I use family meetings as a structure to be able to help parents maybe structure this a little bit more and feel a bit less intimidating, because these conversations to me can be quite organic. Like we ask about, I wonder, what are the I notice and all of these things. But these questions ideally should be a day-to-day daily conversation that you can have with your kids. I call them as like a language, right? A language of legacy that you want to bring forward. You want your kids to be able to say, to be able to grow up to say that when I was young, I felt safe enough to voice out my opinions And so, because I felt what it is to be safe, to be a safe, to feel safe, that I can be the safe person for the people around me, right? And so I want to be able to bring forth this idea that when we talk about, dealing with triggers, when we talk about being playful, we really want to come in from the aspect that we are not just helping the child, we are helping ourselves, we're helping the generations to come.
Wow, I really appreciate how you've connected that to legacy. And it sounds like, if I'm hearing you correctly, that the way that you view legacy is the emotional experience that we pass on to our kids and that they pass on to their children. And I really that makes sense to me. Sometimes we think of legacy as being like the money that your children will inherit, or something like that. And yet, this is so much more important than that.
Yes.
So, I would love to hear how we pass on this legacy and what that looks like in the context of a family meeting.
Yes. So, like I said just now, family meetings are just one of the many ways that we can build this legacy of having a sensitive nervous system, a safe nervous system, a safe emotional space for our children. And it comes in I would say like a little container, right? When we talk about a language, it feels like you're immersive, right? It's you're immersing in the language. You're speaking, you're talking about it, you're speaking with other people, and you're really in using it, right? You're using it. When we create a family meeting structure, it's an environment where it is intentional. So when you are setting up this family meeting, you are naturally aware that this is your objective that you would like to do. You'd like to create an environment where these questions get asked and that they are able to reflect, and then you're able to connect with them as well, right? So I use this framework called the LOVE framework, and LOVE stands for L for listen. Listen with empathy. O stands for objective. So observe with objectively without judgment. And a V stands for respecting their voice, no matter how tiny this human being is, or no matter whether they're on points, if making a relevant point or not. And E is to be able to explore these difficult conversations, or to explore problem-solving methods. There are many ways that we can ask these questions, and I usually tell people to start really easy. There is no need to ask very big, complicated questions. I start with as simple as "What are you grateful for?" And or what goal would you like to set? What would you like to improve on? And so these are very simple questions that even a little child can answer. They may not answer fully to the depth that you want, but they start somewhere by voicing out their voice, right? To be able to express themselves, and to know that this is a safe space to say whatever that they want, even though it doesn't make sense. It can be a gibberish answer. When we started out with our youngest kid, he was gibberish. He wasn't making sense, but we thank you for telling us that, and let's move on, right? And just giving them the space to say that you are important. Right, we don't get enough of these. I definitely did not get enough of all these messages when I was growing up. And so it is really important that we hold these voices very delicately and very gently. So having this love framework helps the family meeting to become more structured. There's a tendency for people, including when I first started, to turn it into a logistics type meeting. Like when I mean logistics, you'll be like, what are we going to do for holidays this time? Shall we go on vacation? Or what camps shall we participate, while you're on vacation? Have you got your work structured? Right? We tend to go into a lot of these conversations, and a lot of times when we are not intentional, that's all the conversation that we have with our child, and that can be really sad. When I was growing up, a lot of the times I felt that. And I didn't have a strong connection with my own mom, and I always wondered what was missing. It was that emotional peace. It was a peace where my mom could delight in me and say, "Wow, you did wonderful." I never got that. And it is my very strong intention that I do that for my kids, and I created this framework so that other people can go out there and delight in their kids. And to be able to say, yes, you are important. You're important enough for your voice, for you to voice out your thoughts. And how powerful it is for us to use this family meeting structure to build a child who is confident, connected, and beautiful creators.
Wow. This is so wonderful because I'm one of those people that sometimes have used family meetings in the past as the time to work out the logistics.
Yeah, we've definitely, that's how we failed in our family meetings with our kids. No, we're not talking
Yeah.
schedule. Mom and dad, no.
We tried to add more fun stuff, but
We did not do well. We tried.
didn't
We tried family
succeed.
meetings. We just needed a better framework.
So what I like is what you're talking about is shifting it away from the logistics and making it a connection time. And I wanted to repeat your framework. So the L is for love, the O is for observe.
Objective observe, I believe.
Observe
Yeah,
objectively.
L for listen.
Oh,
Use
sorry.
L for listen,
The
active
love framework, yes.
listen. Listen, yeah,
Listen.
listen with empathy, and O for observe. A lot of the times when we hear them, our bells are ringing. Like, no, they shouldn't be doing this. No, this is not the right answer. You shouldn't, So we want to hold that with space, with love, and if that is where they are at, that is where they are at. We meet them at where they are, and listen without observe the situation without judgment.
Yeah.
V for
For voice.
for voice, for respecting the voice, and valuing their voice, and then E for exploring options together. A lot of the time we tend to be very adult directed, which means that I know the best. I'm your mom. I'm going to tell you what to do, right? You're going to follow me this, and this. Our kids gonna follow? No, I never did. Right? So it's really exploring, saying, okay, yeah, why don't you try your method? And if your method doesn't work, there's what is your fallback? What is your plan B? What's your plan C? Would you be willing to listen to me thereafter? It's giving them that space to fail forward. Love it.
I really enjoy the practicalness of family meetings and the framework that you presented here. We've talked about a lot of different things that I think we could really implement in families of any age kids. Do you have anything else that you want to make sure that we wrap up with or that you would like to leave folks with here?
Yeah, I think what I really want to say with these family meetings is I know there can be a lot of worry, a lot of overwhelm, but if we just start and we don't have to wait for the stars to be aligned, we just start as messy as it is, as imperfectly as it is, we just get started. 10, 15 minutes to start will be good enough. It could be one question, and it can be really, really magical. Instead of thinking this as another thing on your list to do, think about what could happen if this thing helps to lighten your load. So there are many times that all I needed was to give it a breathing room, to air it out, as Dan Siegel would say, to name it, to tame it. So when you bring this topic to light, you can see that the next month we do our family meetings monthly. You can do it weekly or monthly, but we do our meetings monthly, and you will see that this problem actually magically dissolves. So I can give you an example here. So there are times, there were a couple of times where I said my kids would go like, "Oh, what do I do now? I'm bored." And this will go on and on and on. You can imagine it can be quite frustrating and triggering for a mom. And there was other times where he would say like a lot of inappropriate words. See, I have a child who's going into a tween age, and you know they pick up all of these cool words that they think it's fun to use and cool to use, but they're inappropriate, especially with younger kids around, and things like that. So I would use these family meetings to table it up to our discussion, and I would say things as what I've talked about before. I noticed that you've been using these words. You've been using these words like, I don't know what did I say just now? I don't know what to do now. Tell me what to do. You know, that's not what we want to bring up. And I noticed that that's bothering me. You know, and so there's a level of vulnerability and authenticity that goes along with this as well. And so that's what I would say to them about how I would feel, and I would invite them to say about what they see from their position. Maybe it could be like, oh, I didn't notice that I was actually saying that so often. But now that you tell me, I'm like, yeah, you're right. And then we come together to come with a solution to say like what would work for us. So we would brainstorm an idea together. Not all ideas work, of course, but it is the opportunity to be able to say, let's come back to this the next month. If it doesn't work, we can table it on again and then discuss. Yeah, so I think that, you know, this family meetings, it isn't a new concept, to be honest, right? It is something that these ultra rich families, you know, and when we think about legacy, right, it's what they have been doing it on for centuries already, right? But they see it from a more legalistic manner, and they talk about a lot of agreements and things like that. But at the end of the day, when we distill down to what's truly important, whether you're managing $1 billion or managing bedtime, the big question to ask ourselves is, what are we handing over to them? So I would like to leave all our audience with this. The greatest gift that you can give your kids isn't what you leave behind, right? It is what you can give them right here, right now. It is your healed version of yourself to realize that, oh, this is what I want for me, for myself, and this is what I want for my family.
Great. I like that shift and viewing legacy that way. And also, having some intentionality about getting together for family meetings, and the framework that you've walked us through. You have a number of things available online for families. What would be the best way for people to find those or to find out more about you?
Yes, so if they are keen to know more about family meetings, I have a family meeting blueprint that is available for download for free for people in this conference. And all you have to do is to go to my Instagram and on any post, comment the word summit, and it would send you a DM link that gives you the download to be able to download that. I'll give Jason and Cecilia the link to my Instagram where you can do that. And if you find that the CPR method works for you, you can always come to me and via you can send I'll give you my email, and then you can contact me and we can see how we can work together to to go through this a little bit deeper.
That's great. Thank you, Cheryl. Thanks for taking the time with us, walking us through your different frameworks and making this really tangible and setting up a perspective of something that we can do long term for our kids and for them to be able to pass along. It's been great talking to you and look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Thank you. It's my absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.